T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Yes!
Oh, it is.
It is!
The Alex Dono Show here on WQAM. Streaming all over the internet, radio.com. Radio.com app on your smartphone. It's the only smartphone app to listen to this fine radio station. Make sure you've made the switch to the radio.com app. I mentioned the update 2 days away from preseason game number 2 for the Miami Dolphins. And we'll bring on our good friend Antoine Staley. Covers the Dolphins for USA Today's Dolphins Wire. Does a great job there. Also covers the Canes for Athlon Sports. Antoine joins us now on the Toyota of Hollywood Hotline. Antoine, how you doing tonight, sir?
I'm doing all right, Dono. How you doing?
I'm doing great. And what Antoine, do you think the mission is for the Dolphins in the second preseason game? Obviously, we know the third preseason game, that's the dress rehearsal. But how long do you think we'll see the offensive starters? And what do you think Adam Gase wants his team to accomplish on Friday?
Well, I think you'll see the starters quite a bit in the first quarter. We saw them for the first series, well, the offense for that matter. I think we'll see them probably for at least for half of the first quarter, and they want to get some rhythm going offensively. I know they got down, and Tannehill did a good job his first and only drive there on last Thursday night, but of course they want to score some points to get in the end zone. So, yeah, I expect them to have a few series, maybe 3, possibly 4, depending on how the game goes, and play a substantial amount of the first quarter.
You know, earlier this week, I couldn't believe this became such a big national topic. Ryan Tannehill kicking Kalen Ballage out of the huddle in practice and chewing him out on the sideline as well. What was your take on that situation, Antoine? And do you feel that that's something that as the starting quarterback of an NFL team, Ryan Tannehill is entitled to do?
I mean, it's a situation where people have to understand. I understand why it's a national story, because the Dolphins don't really get talked about a lot, and a lot of people feel like Tannehill hasn't done a whole lot in his career. And you know, to be honest with you, yeah, I mean, he's had a pedestrian, average type of career up to this point, but you have to look at it from his standpoint. He's coming off these 2 knee injuries, and Charles Harris came just blindsided. I could have just blindsided him. And just if that was in a real game, it could have possibly ended his season again. So he's just trying to teach a moment for Kalen Ballage. He probably wishes he could have done it a little differently, especially with all the buildup and the way he blew up. But the fact of the matter is, he wanted to have a teaching moment with Ballage and let him know that you can't do that, especially when the regular season comes, because I'm going to get killed if you don't. Bought this guy. So yeah, I think it was a little bit overblown, but at the same time I understand why it probably was, because the national perspective feels a lot differently than about the Miami Dolphins than locally they do.
Sticking with running backs here, you wrote a piece on this this week at Dolphins Wire. What was the conversation about that Adam Gase had with Kenyon Drake? Something about his behavior. What went on there?
Well, it's just something about he just needs to keep his temper in check. If you remember going back to the regular season last year against Buffalo, him and Jarvis Landry, who of course was on the team at the time, ended up getting ejected for that game. And this off season, Adam Gase was talking about stressing that Kenyon Drake has changed. Drake feels like he's changed as much as a man. And I understand the way Gabe Wright, who ended up getting cut, ended up hitting him.
Right.
It was a bit of a cheap shot, but yeah, just Adam Gase just wants him to try to keep that temper in check, because they need him. They need him. They need his production this year. They can't afford to lose him. And we saw our Dolphins offense without him against the Bills last year, and he was really the only running back that really had it. So Noah's Perry, but Perry is not necessarily a starting NFL running back. So they really need Kenyon Drake to be successful this year, and that's the message Adam Gase was trying to convey to him.
Adam Gase was complimentary this week about the rookie class so far. What have you seen from the rookies, especially focusing on, you know, the top three guys like Micah Fitzpatrick, Mike Gesicki, and Jerome Baker? And I especially look at Jerome Baker, how badly the Dolphins in recent years have needed help at linebacker. What have been your impressions on these players?
Oh, I thought they performed really well, especially on Thursday night. I think Micah made some big hits, knocking the ball loose, and the Dolphins thought he did a good job, so much so that they inserted him in their starting lineup, put him at nickel corner, and ended up moving Bobby McCain over to the outside boundary cornerback position opposite Xavien Howard because they hadn't been able to get the production that they wanted to. Neither Torrey McTyer or Kadarius Tankersley has won the starting job, has really done anything to keep that job, and Tony Lippett has been hurt. So they feel like this is the best lineup they have, and that Matt Burke feels like they're going to get the best 11 man on out on the field defensively, and I feel like this is the best lineup for them, especially in the secondary.
We are joined by Antoine Staley, covering the Miami Dolphins for USA Today's Dolphins Wire. He also covers Canes football for Athlon Sports. I do want to get into some Canes here in a moment, but, you know, Antoine, what are your expectations this year for Frank Gore? I'm very curious about that because, I mean, to me, as a longtime Canes fan, even followed Frank Gore when he was in high school because it was impossible to avoid the hype for that guy coming out of Coral Gables. At age 35, what do you think is his upside now as a Dolphin?
I mean, I think he's going to be productive. I don't expect him to get over 1,000 yards. I mean, he probably could if they needed him to, but the fact of the matter is they have Kenyon Drake there, and they're going to lose a little bit of Caleb Ballard. So they don't need Frank Gore. They don't need to run down Frank Gore like that. They don't need him to even get 900 yards. I think a acceptable season, maybe 800 yards rushing, because Adam Gase likes to interchange his running backs. He don't necessarily believe in having one bell cow running back. Jay Ajayi had the Marvis Lear 2016, but that's not traditionally how Adam Gase would want to run his offense. He wants to try to change out running backs, but in that year, he just kind of rolled with the hot hand, and it ended up helping him guide them to the playoffs.
You know, going on to a player who's no longer a Miami Dolphin, Jarvis Landry is clearly still in the honeymoon phase with the Cleveland Browns. Like, he cannot stop talking up the Cleveland Browns and throwing little pot shots at the Dolphins. He's ranting and raving about how the coaching staff is giving him so many more routes to run in Cleveland. He was so limited in Miami. Do you think there was any validity to that, Antoine? Was it the Dolphins pigeonholing him as a slot receiver, or do you think maybe he's just looking for any excuse to take shots at Miami?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think the Browns are exploring options with him, letting him run out, be on the outside. But I also think that, he's petty. He wants to take shots at the Dolphins because he felt like they were cheap and didn't want to pay him the money that he owed. But the fact that they didn't have the money, I don't understand what Landry is so angry about. It's not that the Dolphins didn't want him. They really wanted to keep him. And we've talked to Adam Gase about this, but they just didn't have the capital to do so. Remember, they had to let go of Ndamukong Suh just so they could have money to sign free agents this offseason. Other than that, they were strapped for cash and wouldn't have been able to do anything. They wouldn't have been able to sign Amendola or Albert Wilson or make some of the moves that they had because they just simply did not have the money. And it wasn't warranted as spending $14 million a year on Jarvis Landry, no matter how good he is, because at the end of the day, there was still a 6-10 team with him. So they felt like losing him, they wouldn't be that much worse off.
I don't know if you make official predictions for Dolphins Wire every year, but have you made your prediction yet on the win-loss record this year?
I have not, but I will shortly. I'll probably do that after the third preseason game. I do it kind of leading up to the season, but I already have in mind kind of what I'm thinking record-wise for the Dolphins.
What about Canes football? Do you have a predicted record there?
Yeah, I did one for Athlon Sports. I guess you might have missed that.
I think I did see it, actually. Tell me that record again, because I remember seeing it. I said, I thought Antoine was my boy, but he's dogging my Canes.
I had him 10-2.
Oh, you did? Okay, I'm sorry. I think I may have confused you for someone else on Athlon. So, okay, so 10 wins, I can give you that. 10 wins is reasonable.
I think all of us had 10 wins.
It's just really?
A matter of what we had as far as who they're losing to.
That was what it was. Do you have them losing to Florida State?
Yes.
That was what I was angry about. How dare you?
Okay, does it matter if they're 10-2? Does it really matter who they lose to?
I don't know, man. I think I'd rather lose like to Pitt and Virginia than lose to Florida State.
Okay, I guess I should have had to lose to Boston College, which is possible. It's possible. I mean, they got a really good team, and A.J. Dillon is, I think, to be the ACC Player of the Year, and that's a Friday night game in Chestnut Hills. So that's not going to be an easy game by any. That's not going to be an easy game by any means.
How much do you think it might harm this team, knowing that, okay, this is not necessarily a great player who got injured, but it's also not a very deep position? Losing Michael Irvin II for an extended period of time, yeah, you've got unbelievable, on paper, true freshmen coming in Brevin Jordan and Will Mallory, and Brian Pelende is there. I'm not sure what he's going to do for this team, but how damaging could the Irvin injury be?
It's really significant because now you're relying on very young guys with experience and you're not starting out with Savannah State. You're starting out with a quality opponent and LSU, despite the fact that whoever LSU, they had a lot of losses, but they're still an SEC quality opponent. So it's huge. It's definitely going to be big in that first game. It's going to limit what the targets Malik Rozier has. So I think it is significant. And also you're asking your tight ends to pick up for protection. I think tight ends, to be honest with you, is one of the biggest adjustments from high school to college or even college to the NFL, because you're learning so much once you get into the program or once you get in the league. We saw that with Mike Gesicki too, coming from college to the NFL. It's so difficult to pick that up right away. He's just now learning how to become an NFL tight end, but it takes time. It's not a position where you usually see freshmen or rookies have that much success.
Let me give you a few names of the guys that I think will be the most impactful. Well, I can probably give you maybe four or five names on what could be the most impactful true freshman on that team this year, and tell me which one you think is going to have the best season. And maybe you'll throw in somebody I hadn't even thought of. But I think about Greg Russo at defensive end. I'll throw in Lorenzo Lingard at running back, although very deep rotation there, as we know. Mark Pope at wide receiver, also a pretty deep receiving core. And I guess I can also throw in Brevin Jordan and Will Mallory at tight end. Which of those guys do you think is going to have the biggest year as a true freshman?
I like Mallory. I really do. I think he, especially considering what happened to Irvin, I think he could have a potential big year. I won't say big year, but I think he could have a significant impact on that offense. So if I had to pick out of the names that you said, I would definitely, that's probably who I would go with there.
Well, I enjoy talking to you as always, my friend. Antoine V. Staley, that's where you follow him on Twitter. Make sure you check him out at Antoine Staley for coverage on the Miami Dolphins, for Dolphins Wire at USA Today, and Canes football coverage for Athlon Sports. Even though he's got Miami losing to Florida State, I still love him.
I appreciate that. Maybe the Canes can prove me wrong, but yeah, I still have them having a pretty good year. So thank you for having me on.
And, of course, make sure you're following Antoine on Twitter, especially during the Carolina preseason game this Friday. He's going to have some great tweets during that.
Yeah, I will be there. So, yeah, please follow me, too.
Yeah, and you are a Carolina native, right?
Yes, I'm from Charlotte. So, yeah, I will definitely be there. I'm actually there right now.
Where does someone get the best barbecue in Charlotte?
Queen City Barbecue, which is downtown Charlotte. So that's probably the best place you can go. It's other places, but that's my favorite.
I'm going to keep that in mind, man, if I'm ever in town. Thank you so much, as always, man.
They should invite you for the ACC Championship because, I'm going to go this year for games making. So they definitely should come. If you do come, then I will definitely take you out there for some barbecue.
I love it. Let's mark that down. Enjoy the rest of your week, my friend.
All right, then. Talk to you soon, Donald.
Queen City Barbecue. I got to remember that. I love Carolina barbecue. I mean, I love any barbecue, but Carolina barbecue, Texas barbecue. I've never been to Memphis, but I understand they've got great barbecue there. Do you have a favorite barbecue, Sports Bomber?
Oh, Texas ribs, man.
Oh, that's so good. Oh, I'm making myself so hungry.
I'll tell you a story about Texas and barbecue. One time many years ago when I was working here at the station, we went out to Radio Row in Dallas that year.
Yeah.
So it's me. It's Krantz. We're all out there and a bunch of guys who were working here at the time. And we're all going out to dinner. And everybody goes, hey, let's go get seafood. And I'm like,
in Texas?
In Texas? I'm like, what is wrong with you people? Like, let's go get a steak.
Especially in Dallas. Like, you're nowhere near the sea.
Thank you. So I'm sitting there going, hey, guys, let's go get some steak. Let's go get some rib. No, we want to eat seafood. So we go to this place, the seafood place. And thank God they had a steakhouse next door that was like a sister place, because I ordered the steak, which was from the steakhouse next door. And everyone else got seafood, and it was all terrible. And I had to tell them exactly like I told you. What do you think? Your food, your fish is 5 minutes from the plate, from the water to the plate. And here's a cold truck drive all the way out to Texas. You come to Texas to eat
That's
seafood.
That's ridiculous, man. Look, if I lived in Dallas, I would never eat seafood there. I'd wait till I'm, like, on vacation somewhere on the coast.
Yeah, you got to go to Maine or something like that, or on down the coast,
yeah.
man.
Yeah. Wow, that is crazy. Oh, man. What's going on with Udonis Haslem? We'll discuss that next here on QAM. Remember around, I don't know, 8:30, 8:45, might have been after 9 o'clock last night, that it's like some radio host in Houston with under 2,000 Twitter followers tweeted out that he was reporting that Dwayne Wade had agreed to return to the Heat next year. And, like, I mean, it got a little bit of traction. Some people were retweeting it and sending it to me. But then I looked at, like, who is this guy? Under 2,000 Twitter followers, no blue check mark. He's in Houston, so what the hell does he know about the Miami Heat? After I saw that, I texted somebody who would not necessarily know for sure if Dwayne Wade was coming back, but would know if that report was legit or not. And his response to me was, I don't know who that is that reported that. So here's a little bit more on that before we get to Udonis Haslem. Miami Heat legend Dwayne Wade appeared to downplay speculation he's set to sign a one-year contract with the organization before retiring after the 2018-2019 NBA season. Adam Spolane of Sports Radio 610 in Houston reported the rumored update on Wade's free agent status Tuesday, but the future Hall of Fame guard seemingly responded Wednesday via Twitter. Fake news is what D-Wade tweeted out. Alex Kennedy of Hoops Hype also raised doubts about the report Wednesday, noting no contract agreement is in place and retirement is a serious consideration for the 36-year-old Chicago native. In April, Wade said he wasn't prepared to make any announcements about his future after finishing his 15th season. That's not my focus, he told reporters. Fresh off his NBA season, my 15th year, I sit back and think about that. Then I dive in and throw myself into my family. They're next on my bucket list, making sure I'm there for them. And when it comes to the basketball side of it, which is a long time away from now, then I'll think about that. So, yeah, the thing is, I see a tweet from somebody in Houston who is not known for breaking news. I mean, do you think maybe he caught a whiff of something and just thought, maybe I'm right here, let me take a shot at getting this right, that if this really does come down this evening, I look like a genius if I'm the guy who broke it? Or could it be him trolling to try and, because I mentioned under 2,000 Twitter followers, I wonder what he's up to now. In fact, let me pull up Adam Spolane and see what he's at now. Because when he sent out that tweet, he was at like 1,800 Twitter followers. He didn't even gain that many. He was 1,900 Twitter followers now. So it's not like his Twitter account exploded from that.
I would say it's the latter. It just failed.
Yeah. Just a plain failure.
I think it's kind of like one of those games of what I call Twitter telephone, where one person says something and then another person says something and then it becomes fact in the Twitterverse.
Right.
But well, it didn't get him what he wanted.
It was an epic fail by Adam Spolane. He picked up like 130 Twitter followers from that. It's not that impressive.
You remember a couple of years ago when John Gruden was coming to the U?
Lake Lewis. I'll never forget that bum. That was the guy. Some reporter from Orlando, Lake Lewis. Some guy in Orlando somehow thought he was breaking John Gruden to the Miami Hurricanes, and for like 3 hours, that guy was a god. Oh, I don't know who Lake Lewis is, but he's awesome because he says John Gruden is coming to Miami. Then 3 hours later, when you realize it's completely bogus, we ended up with Al Golden. But 3 hours later, Lake Lewis, like that guy was bullied on social media. I can remember like a year after it happened, I was still sending angry tweets to Lake Lewis for that report.
I'm still mad at him because what I was actually running this shift at that time.
Ooh.
And so it was breaking. So we were up here, you know, we were cutting stuff, trying to follow up, trying to get all these UM guys. I got a call from the program director at the time. I had to throw imaging together
really?
For the morning. I had to grab a bunch of like Gruden clips, wow. scoop it together with the U, threw all, did all this work, stayed here till like 12 o'clock at night only for it to be completely false for the next day.
John Gruden. I never thought he would coach again. I mean, he ended up like 8 years after that, he ends up back with the Oakland Raiders. But I mean, what a gig Gruden had. I didn't think he should have left the TV gig.
Isn't that a head scratcher?
You're getting paid seven figures, high seven figures, to do relatively speak. I'm not saying that being a commentator on Monday Night Football is easy. That's not what I'm saying. But that's relatively easy to make seven figures for to work 16 weeks a year and not even be the play-by-play guy, just to be the guy who throws in comments here and there and breaks down football. That's a fantastically cushy gig. And then you give that up to go back to, you know, the 19-hour workdays of being an NFL head coach. It's just a different type of animal it takes to do that job. Different type of people. I mean, Sports Bomber, there's a reason why you and me have never pursued high-level coaching, right? Because I don't think – and, yeah, you can make, obviously, seven figures being a coach at that level. But to me, the exhaustion, mental and physical, that would come from that, it wouldn't be my preferred way to make seven figures is what I'm saying, right? That if I could choose from, I can either sit in a booth for, you know, 3.5 hours on a Monday night, 16 weeks a year and make seven figures, or I can work 19-hour days in the hot sun with the pressure that comes with being a football head coach or make seven figures that way, I'm going with the commentary gig if I have the choice of that. John Gruden had that choice. But clearly, there is a competitive drive that head coaches in the NFL have where even if you have that cushy broadcasting gig, it never happened with John Madden. He stayed in that chair for like 40 years. But for some guys, that competitive drive never goes away, and they're looking to get back into coaching. And I guess he just had that.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. Those guys all come back, whether it's Jimmy Johnson, whether it's Bill Parcells for 15 times.
Yeah.
You know, they all tend to come back. But yeah, you mentioned it, John Madden. I mean, John Gruden wasn't just on the air. Like, John Gruden was really good on TV.
He was good, yeah.
You know, he was one of my favorite guys. You know, he kind of had that whole attitude, and then he would come out and he'd say stuff like, oh, you know, you got that good throw out there. You know, he had a stick. You know, he was good. And he had the Madden thing going on because he was a coach at one time. He'd won the one Super Bowl.
Yep.
Walked away into the sunset the way he should do it. You know, he had that career track. We could have been talking about John Gruden football in 10 years
right.
instead of John Madden football.
That's a great point.
You know, this guy had it all just to go back there and coach the Raiders again. Like, really? Like,
and you notice the other part of that hustle he had was every couple of years he got a big raise from ESPN because his agent, hardest working man in media, his agent kept floating those rumors. Oh, Miami Hurricanes want John Gruden to coach. Wasn't he linked with like the Tennessee Volunteers at one point?
Yes.
He was linked to the Miami Dolphins at one point with rumors. I mean, he had been linked to almost every pro and college team, and every time those rumors went out there, they took that rumor to get leverage with ESPN and get a raise. That happened a few times with him.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't the Redskins originally want John Gruden, and then that was kind of the pitch to get Jay in there?
Yeah, it was. In fact, I think they might have been confused and thought they were hiring John Gruden, and then Jay Gruden walks through that door. It's like, wait, have you noticed that Jay Gruden looks like Frank Caliendo doing John Gruden?
Yes, he does.
He does, right?
Wow, I never noticed that.
Like when Frank Caliendo, like he puts on like the Gruden wig and the makeup, he looks more like Jay Gruden. Like he trying to look like John Gruden, he looks exactly like Jay Gruden.
Have you ever seen the America's game with the 2002 Bucks where John Gruden shows up to Jay Gruden's like Arena Football League game?
No.
Oh, yeah, because if you watch 2002 Bucks, Jay Gruden was coaching on the Bucks at the time, but he was also the quarterback for the then Tampa Bay Storm.
Wow.
So John Gruden would show up and like give them, like then they're giving the refs like ear, you know, cheering on Jay Gruden as he quarterbacked the Storm.
That is funny. That is really funny. Let me get back to, I know that we took a detour into some football stuff here, but let me get back to the latest on Udonis Haslem because we talked about Dwayne Wade a little bit. Ira Winderman posted this on the Sun Sentinel earlier today. The Miami Heat are moving toward an agreement with Udonis Haslem for a return for his 16th season with the team. A source familiar with the – now that's a source that I trust, Ira Winderman. A source familiar with the discussions confirmed Wednesday to the South Florida Sun Sentinel. Haslem, 38, whose playing time was reduced to 14 appearances for a total of 72 minutes last season. Going without a postseason appearance as the Heat fell in five games in the first round of the playoffs to Philadelphia, had spoken earlier in the offseason of potentially looking to play elsewhere, including overseas, in a bid for more playing time. Nobody bought that, though. Like, I could never picture Udonis Haslem saying, yeah, I'm just going to go to China and play. Let me go to Lebanon and play. Let me go to Lithuania. Now that the Ball family is gone, I can go play there. I was never buying that. Since then, however, he has been working out with several Heat players, including a Tuesday session with Tyler Johnson, James Johnson, Wayne Ellington, and Dwayne Wade, who, like Haslem, remains a free agent. Of his talks with the Heat, Haslem told the Associated Press, it was a great conversation. At the end of the day, it was a conversation about if they want me back and if I want to be back. I could never imagine that I would feel this fondly of a player who, you know, only appeared in 14 games last year and was basically just collecting dust on the bench, right? The fact that I feel so strongly about wanting Udonis Haslem to come back, under normal circumstances, it doesn't add up. I just feel like his presence, his aura, is so important to that team. And you know you always have an enforcer if you need one, right? You got six fouls if you need them with Udonis Haslem. Like, you would never think that way, that you could feel that strongly about an NBA player who at this point probably would appear in less than 14 games next year and has virtually no impact on your basketball playing product. And yet Udonis Haslem, I feel, is as important to that team as probably any of the assistant coaches are. Like, I'm not going to say UD is more important than Eric Spoelstra. I think that'd be a little bit crazy. But Udonis Haslem, to me, is as important to that team as any of the assistant coaches are to that team. So I feel very strongly about wanting Udonis Haslem to come back for another year. I want D-Wade back as well. I do. I think the longer he takes to make up his mind, the more likely he is to retire. But kudos to that bloke in Houston who tried to break some fake news. I appreciate the hustle there, man. 56022 on the Kendall Toyota, West Kendall Toyota text line. You can get in via the phone lines at 305-567-0560 or 954-567-0560. I want to tap into something we kind of discussed earlier, even during the fight night portion. The ticket that you'd want to get, would you take a free ticket to a Miami Hurricanes national title game? Let's say Canes versus Notre Dame for the national championship. Or would you take a Miami Dolphins Super Bowl ticket? I know my answer is in the minority. The Alex Dono Show continues next here on QAM. I think people are pretty split on whether or not they want Dwayne Wade back. Back-to-back texts at 56022 on the Kendall Toyota, West Kendall Toyota text line. Everybody relax. Wade will be back. He's just waiting until camp starts to sign to play this upcoming season with the Heat. Another text. I'm hoping he retires. I mean, is there, like, what would the benefit be on waiting until camp starts? Like, I talked about this with Ira Winderman, and, like, he downplayed this idea. People seem to kind of assume that NBA training camp is just like NFL training camps. Like, you remember Brett Favre used to do this. Some NFL players would kind of wait until training camp was halfway over, so they missed the hard part of it. Okay, now I'm coming back. Michael Strahan did the same thing at least once, maybe twice. You kind of wait to come back until training camp was mostly over.
Michael Strahan was quoted as saying, if I knew it from the beginning that all I had to do was pay $200,000 to miss training camp, I'd have done that every year.
Oh, man. I can remember hearing a story. Michael Strahan was a good trash talker back in the day. I remember a story that Rex Hadnot shared. You remember Rex Hadnot, a former offensive guard from the Dolphins?
Oh, how could I forget that name?
You shouldn't. And he was actually like a really good interview. Like, Rex Hadnot always had something to say. Hadnot was on the 07 Dolphins who played against the Giants in London?
Yes.
And so, and Rex Hadnot, like, he was trash talking Michael Strahan, like, incessantly on the field. And then at one point, you know, Michael Strahan was just not saying anything to him. He was just kind of like in one ear, out the other, not acknowledging him. And then at a certain point, I guess Michael Strahan had had enough, and he's like, by the way, who are you? And he goes, oh, I'm Rex Hadnot. I still don't know who you are, but I could probably pay your salary. That's fair. I just thought that was great, man.
I remember that London game. Hey, here's a trivia question for you on that London game.
Yeah.
Do you remember the name of the Dolphins' starting running back for that game?
For that game?
Yes.
I don't know. Was it...
He had a little cup of tea with us for the second half of that season.
Sam Congato?
No. He was on the team, but he was not the starter.
Was it Jesse Chapman?
That's the one.
I knew I was going to get to it at some point. Jesse Chapman, I remember him. He had taken a year off before he came here in 07. He had taken a year off because he had like eaten himself out of the league. Like he just, I think he went through like some personal problems and like he got really heavy, but then he got back in shape and he made a comeback with the Dolphins. I remember that guy, man. 560-22 on the Kendall Toyota, West Kendall Toyota text line. Texter writes in, Udonis Haslam is that coach on the bench the squad needs. Impact is critical in that role, not even necessarily on the court. And Udonis Haslam, you know, a lot of people just assume that when he's done playing, he'll be a great coach, and he probably would be. But, Udonis can just slide into the Heat assistant coaching staff, no problem, easy transition. He said a couple months ago he doesn't want to do that. Like, he says he has no interest in being a coach. Like, he's fine being a mentor and almost a coach on the roster, but he doesn't want to be the suit. Like he sees value in actually wearing the jersey, being in the locker room with the teammates, being a mentor on the roster. He doesn't see himself, Udonis, as the type of guy who could be valuable in the same way wearing a suit as part of the coaching staff. Like he actually prefers being on a roster, and who knows, when he retires, he may just focus on his businesses. He owns Subway restaurants. He's got his hands in a lot of things. He may get out of basketball completely.
I think he does see the absolute value of wearing that uniform and staying on the bench and collecting that veteran's minimum, which is probably more than what he'd make as a coach.
Not bad, man. What is that for him? Like $2.3 million? I think it's the veteran's
minimum. Every time,
minimum.
Man.
Can you imagine, like, and obviously Udonis Haslam earned it because for many years he was a very underrated, gritty, successful power forward, right? I will never forget the Dirk Stopper. So Udonis Haslam earned the status that he has now. But imagine you reach a point in your life where I can make $2.3 million to not really do anything. Right? I mean, I can make $2.3 million this year. Granted, he earned it throughout his basketball career. But now I head into my 16th year in the NBA. I can earn over $2 million just to kind of sit on the bench and mentor some young guys. Like, that's all that I have to do. Haslam will go down as one of the most beloved non-star athletes in South Florida history. Yeah, you know, I don't know if you just came up with that thought independently. You might have, but you may have heard I did a show about that a couple of months ago where, to me, Udonis Haslam, I talked about this, might have been like June or July. Udonis Haslam, to me, my most beloved non-superstar in South Florida sports history, right? Because most of the beloved athletes that we have in mind, you know, you're thinking about the Dwayne Wades, the Dan Marinos, the Jason Taylors, the Zach Thomases. Those were superstar athletes. Miguel Cabrera. You know, you're thinking about superstar athletes. Udonis Haslam, never an all-star, never a superstar. Yeah, he was on championship teams, but he wasn't the headliner, right? Like, you never heard, like, ESPN saying, oh, Udonis Haslam and the Miami Heat just won another title. Like, he was never the headlining guy, not a superstar. To me, he is the most beloved non-superstar athlete in South Florida sports history.
I think you can say that now. I think there's been other players throughout South Florida sports history that have occupied that role.
Not to UD's level, though. Who would you think? Do you have an example?
The Mad Dog at one point.
Yeah, but more for media though.
No, like, he was a useful player on those 72 teams.
He was,
man.
But and I love the Mad Dog, but if not for the three-decade spanning broadcasting career, he doesn't reach the Haslam stratosphere.
I think I think my point is at that moment in time.
Okay.
I think in 10 years from now, we'll still remember Udonis Haslam.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Because, like, okay, I'll give you another example. Jim Crash Jensen from the Dolphin from the 80s and the 90s. Talk about a guy
right,
who was,
right.
you know, kind of a quarterback, kind of a tight end, kind of a split back, blue-collar special teams guy down here. When he was playing, everybody loved Crash. And now that he's been gone for a few years, no one remembers Crash so much.
So we're living in the moment with Haslam is what you're saying.
I think Haslam's moment has passed, and he's hanging on to it at this point. So the longer he stays on the roster,
I don't know if it ever passes. Well, okay, so you're saying like 10 years after he retires,
yeah,
we're not going to necessarily
when the next guy comes around.
Wow, how dare you disrespect Udonis Haslam like that?
I'm not trying to disrespect Udonis Haslam any more than I'm trying to respect Jim Jensen or the Mad Dog, who I have an extreme love for. But that's just the cycle of it with those blue collar guys, man. I remember one time I could even make a case Wes Helms was like that.
I remember Wes Helms. I never would put him in the Udonis Haslam stratosphere, though.
He's not an all-star, but he was helpful.
I feel like we should start like a GoFundMe to always honor Udonis Haslam's memory.
We should just build. They should build something in front of the stadium.
You saw the Denver fans that started a GoFundMe account to pay the Broncos to cut Paxton Lynch. Like, this is my question, and maybe you would know better, Sports Bomber, because I asked this question to Young Biff yesterday, and I'm still not convinced he was correct on this. If you start like a GoFundMe, and people do this now, they start trolling GoFundMe accounts, right? A couple of months ago, some just random TMZ fan started a GoFundMe account to make Kylie Jenner a billionaire because she was like a couple hundred million short of $1 billion. So let's try and raise $200,000 to make her, or $2 million, whatever it was, to make her a billionaire. These are obviously jokes, yet you really are setting up real GoFundMes that people with a lot of time and I guess either really bad judgment or disposable income will donate real money to. What happens to that money? Do you have to reach a goal to keep it, or
it's gone once you put
that's what I did. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, I don't know what Young Biff told you, but that money's gone.
No, he did tell me. But the person who started gets to keep it, right?
Oh yeah.
No, that is what he told me, but I just have a hard time believing that. So you're saying that some random Joe Blow in Denver, who's getting a lot of press now, it's on every sports blog, some guy starts a GoFundMe account trying to raise, like, whatever it is, like $600,000 just to send to the Broncos to cut Paxton Lynch. Let's say, you know, he ends up making like $5,000 because it's become nationally famous. He can just keep that money?
I do believe that unless the goal is reached, then you don't get to keep the money. But if you reach or exceed, you get to keep the money so that you can go ahead and do your project. But if you don't make it, I think it kind of goes,
see,
I think it kinda goes
that's
back.
The answer I was looking for, right? Because so what if like it falls laughably short of the goal, but you still do get like $5,000 in the account.
I think that actually goes back. I have to verify.
I hope so.
That.
I hope that goes back because I mean, to me, that's a great troll job, right? Like we could start a GoFundMe account today to to entice Dwayne Wade to come back, and there are going to be some Heat fans. I've got $3. I don't care if I ever see again. Let me donate that. If we could just keep that money, that's a great scam.
We can get into tremendous trouble with that because we have the legitimacy of the station behind us too.
Oh, I'm not saying I'm really going to do it.
I know what I mean.
Well, let's not get crazy.
But I'll give you an example of kind of the unethical nature of the GoFundMe page at this point. A couple of years back, one of these is this Japanese video game creator for a series. You ever play Castlevania on Nintendo?
Heard of it, but never played.
Okay. Well, Castlevania was like a big deal, big series.
Yeah.
So the creator basically got shut out by the company, said, look, you're not making another Castlevania game. It's not happening.
Wow.
So he started a GoFundMe page, and he showed all these sprites and all this stuff. This is what the new game is going to be. I need X amount of money to make the game. So everybody who's a huge Castlevania fan, they run in there and they start giving this guy, and he made way more money than he needed to by the end date. And the guy never made the game, never had any intention of making the game. What he used it for was to go back to the company and say, hey, look, people are willing to like this. People are willing to pay money for this as an excuse to try to get them to greenlight the game. And, of course, the game never got greenlit, so the guy kept the money, and there's never a Castlevania game.
What a scam. Did you say how much money did that raise?
I don't recall. I'd have to look up the actual numbers, but it was a big number. It was a big number. It was definitely in the hundreds of thousands.
Imagine like retiring on GoFundMe money.
Oh, don't tease me.
It's like you got to be really stupid, like to actually donate, even if it's $5. You got to be stupid to donate money to the Let's Cut Paxton Lynch GoFundMe. Like, Sports Bomber, I have donated money to like a handful of GoFundMes in my life, but it's always been we need money for like hospital bills. Like those,
yeah, of course.
Those are the only GoFundMes I donate to. I even have a tough time with this. Where do we draw the ethical line here? And maybe it's easy for me to say this because, you know, like my kid is so young, I haven't incurred any real expenses yet outside of formula and diapers. So I don't really know like how much, you know, as far as school supplies or if we do want to send our kid to private school, if we can afford. Like I haven't incurred a ton of expenses on my child yet because he's so young. But where do you stand on, because I've seen a few of these, and it's always weird when people ask me this. I'm starting a GoFundMe account to like pay for my kid's like trip somewhere. Like, I don't know. Like to me, it's like, call me a stickler, call me old fashioned. But like if you're not asking me to donate money because someone is like sick or you need to pay for someone's funeral or arrangements or medical bills, I don't know if I feel right donating money so your kid can go on an elective trip. Like I don't know.
I'll put a couple caveats in.
Okay.
Okay. What if you know that those people, they're not making, they make barely enough to make ends meet.
Well, maybe
it's like maybe a school trip or something, and the kid, they can't afford it and they don't want the kid to feel left out. Is that really so wrong?
Yeah, I guess it's not. It's just if I don't know you, I'm not going to donate money for that.
I understand.
If it was like a family friend,
yeah,
then maybe. But if it's just somebody I do not know on Twitter, if it's like a listener or just somebody who reaches out to me because, you know, and just like it's somebody I've never met before. Hey, like my friend's daughter wants to go on this, you know, a trip to Washington, D.C. with the band. Can you throw a few bucks? Like if I don't know you, I'm not donating money to that. However, if I don't know you, but you send me a message, hey, you know, my father passed away, we're looking for money for the funeral arrangements. Even if I don't know you, I probably will donate a few bucks to that, but not if your like 14-year-old wants to go on a trip to New York City with her band.
Oh yeah, well no, that's different. I mean, I would speak more like on a school level. Okay, but what about this? So you would be okay if, hey, our football team needs to go to, you know, Texas to play a game. You would do that then? Your Pop Warner team.
It's a good,
you know,
question.
Like when the kids are out there on the, you know, you see the kids.
I've seen
on the
that panhandling, and you know what? I have actually thrown a couple bucks when I see them like
when
panhandling
out there with the helmets and whatnot.
Yeah, no, it's a good call. They guilt me into it, man. Those kids look at me, and because a lot of times I'm not wearing one today, but a lot of times I'll be wearing like a UM hat, and I'll see like a kid in a football jersey who looks at me and like throws up the U. And when they throw up the U, I'm like, just take all my money, all of it.
Gotta love the texture here. The guy who goes, I'm going to the first Hurricane game. I need to GoFundMe for beer.
That's a worthy cause, man. Have you seen how expensive the beer is in stadiums these days?
It ain't cheap. It ain't
cheap. Honestly, like I'm so out of touch because I sit in the press box. How much is it for a beer at like Hard Rock Stadium? Is it over $10?
It's about $9, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
It's actually slightly cheaper than if you go to like one of the big clubs. What's the one right there by Fountain Blue? Everybody
Live?
Goes Live.
Yeah.
Like if you go to Live, I believe you buy the same beer there. It's like $12, $15. So it's actually cheaper than places like that.
You just know you're getting gouged in like a club though.
Oh yeah.
How much is it? Like I haven't been to a club in like 10 years. Like how much is it for bottles for like bottle service, like a vodka bottle or something?
It's a couple $100.
$300 maybe.
Yeah, a couple $100 easy.
That's ridiculous, man.
Even shots are expensive. Like I went to a bar. I'm used to coming to bars down here, and I'll go out and I'm a shot man when I go drinking. I don't like mixed drinks.
Quick to the point. It gets you where you want to go.
I'm not drinking this for flavor. I'm trying to get drunk.
Right.
All right.
Damn right. That's the American way.
Exactly. So give me something. The more it hurts the way down, the better I know it's doing its job. So I go out there and I'll order a couple of shots, and it's like $8 a shot. You know, $5, $7 a shot. Something insane like that. And then I went to Tallahassee, I went to like a bar in Tallahassee, and I'm like, let me get a shot, like expecting like, you know, the usual $8-$9 or whatever. Dude's like $3, $4 of like a shot of rum. I'm like, what? And I'm like, I give the dude a 20, and I'm like, dude, just keep him coming.
I'm going to give you a hot tip because I'm sure you'd be into this. I didn't know about this until a friend of mine referred me to this. They only do these every couple of months, but they'll do like alcohol tasting like courses at Total Wine, various Total Wine locations. I did a month or two back, I did a tequila class, which basically just turned out to here's like 12 shots of tequila to taste. And we're going to like do a little slideshow, like a PowerPoint presentation and I didn't listen to a second of it. Like, dude, I felt like I was back at a class, like at University of Miami, where I didn't pay 1 second of attention to the PowerPoints. They had all these like flashcards up with like different types of agave. I didn't digest any of it, but they gave you like 12 shots there. I think the whole course, and they also had like Moe's Southwest, like catered. Uh-huh. The whole thing was like $25. For $25 a person, you got free food and 12 shots of tequila for no extra charge. You had to put up with a PowerPoint presentation I didn't pay a second of attention to.
I think it's hilarious that they're going to feed you alcohol and expect you to pay attention to the PowerPoint.
People in the class were taking it very seriously, though.
Were you serious?
I was sitting next to this woman. Like, they gave you a notepad. I just doodled in it. But they gave you a notepad. I look over at the woman next to me. They gave you a notepad. The woman next to me was, like, identifying, like, all of the flavors in the tequila shots. And she was actually, like, taking, like, a tiny sip and then, like, pouring out the rest of it because she didn't want to get, like, too drunk to judge it, you know? I mean, people were taking that seriously. And then, like, after the class was over, there was a group of, like, four or five people. There were probably, like, 30 people in the entire class. But after the class was over, there was, like, this little group of, like, four or five people. And they were, like, discussing, like, the sort of, like, the different, like, hints and, like, smoky notes and the different tequilas. And me, like, they had to take me out of there in a stretcher. I was barely walking after that. And then these other people were, like, spitting it out because they didn't want to get hammered. We're like, discussing the different, I do not know any more about tequila after taking the class than I did before I walked in. And yet it was a very rewarding experience.
I cannot imagine that because I don't know, man. There's just liquor is just the most, just the vilest tasting thing I've ever put in my mouth. I can't stand its taste. I've tried every kind of liquor, every kind of combination. I can't sip mixed drinks because the flavor, it's just there. I just got to hold my nose down, take it, and just get it and love the effects. That's it. I can't imagine sitting there going, with some tequila in my mouth going, very lemony. Are you freaking kidding me? I'm trying to get that thing down in my gullet and drink some water.
I can drink wine that way. Like, I can really enjoy, like, tasting wine.
Well, wine's nice that way,
it is,
though.
It is. But, I mean, people absolutely can do that with liquor. I'm not really completely, like, obviously, you're not about that life, Sports Bomber. I can tell that. But, I can tell when something is high quality or super cheap, but just, like, to me, like, really analyzing liquor is not really my thing. Texter writes in, Dono, so true. I pregame at ABC Wine and Spirits tasting. So I guess they do those there. That was, like, the best-kept secret, man. $25. I mean, 12. I mean, just even disregarding the food that you got there, $25 for 12 tequila shots, that's a pretty sweet deal, right? I mean, it was, like, 3:30 p.m. on a Friday, so it wasn't like the ideal going out and getting slosh time, but it was still pretty awesome, man. 9 o'clock hour of the Alex Dono Show coming up.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.